I'm dead serious about vampires.
No, that's like, but you, I'm sure you can start your own channel with that. No problem.
Hello. Pouring coffee is like ASMR, right?
Yeah.
Or peeing.
Or peeing, yeah, I know, that's kind of the thing. Are you peeing right now, or is it ASMR?
Hello, and welcome to Audio Didact.
A Chiroptery podcast. Chiroptieri.
Chiroptieri podcast.
That sounds like a chiropractor.
It does sound like a chiropractor. I am your co-host, Killian.
Oh, is that actually what we're doing? I'm Daniel. Hi.
Just, you're handing me your coffee cup.
Oops. Wrong one.
Thank you.
There we go. Hi, guys.
Okay, welcome to Audio Didact, an apiary podcast. We already introduced ourselves, but I didn't know if you heard the introduction, because I was doing a vampire voice.
Oh, me? Or them?
Them.
Oh.
Well, obviously, boy, we're off to a rough start. It's cool. The episode today is going to be good. We're just off to a roughy good start.
It's because we've had a rough week.
Oh my god.
Where everything we decided to read and watch this week turned out to be bad, and like one thing we should have stopped halfway through and we didn't.
Yep.
Another thing we did stop halfway through and I think we were probably right to do so.
Yep.
And the third thing, I don't think you should have stopped halfway through because I think it probably is better, yeah, to read the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of conversation, but like the first half was really good and the second half was really bad.
Right. Yeah, so today is our bad media podcast.
Bad media.
Bad media.
It could be like a segment.
Yeah.
Except today then it would be episode. like a wine cast.
Yeah.
Like not.
Right, like wine.
Right, like a wine.
Like a fine wine.
Would you like some cheese with that wine?
That was my wine sound. Okay, I'm really sorry, folks.
What do you want to start with?
Let's get started.
You want to start with this book?
Yeah, we'll start with the book. So I just read Gone Girl this week. I somehow avoided any spoilers. The movie has come out. The book has been circulating for quite some time, and people have been talking about it for quite some time.
So how spoiler-free were you? Okay, we're not going to be spoiler-free on this podcast,
right? We're not going to be spoiler-free on this podcast.
The other things we're talking about are going to be Jurassic Park 2 and Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992.
Yeah, the movie, obviously, not the book.
I don't know. Should we wait and talk about Gone Girl at the end so that people can listen if
no,
they don't
I'll just
want
mark,
spoilers? You just mark times?
I'll just mark times when we're done.
Okay.
So you can skip ahead if you don't want to.
So the podcast will be spoilery.
Yeah.
About Gone Girl. I mean, it'll be spoilery,
about Jurassic Park 2 and Bram Stoker's Dracula,
but
that's
like,
your
come
own
on.
Fault.
Yeah, and like, they're unspoilable.
Right. They're not good enough to really... Frankly, I feel that way about Gone Girl.
Also, like, what are you going to spoil in Jurassic Park? You know the premise of Jurassic Park.
Right.
And looking at the movie, you pretty much know who's going to live.
Yeah.
Anyways,
let's get
we'll
to
get there.
Gone Girl first.
So, spoilers of Gone Girl.
Yeah.
How spoiler-free were you?
I knew there was a twist, but
so that's all you really
that's
knew.
All I knew. Okay. And I'm actually pretty disappointed that it wasn't. I usually hate spoilers because I want, like, if I'm going to sit down after a long day and I'm going to watch Game of Thrones, and no, I haven't read the books yet, I don't want you telling me what happened on the episode that came out for you last night, because I live in the UK and I can't watch it till the following day. So usually I'm not into spoilers, but I wish that someone had told me about Gone Girl, because then I would not have read it, or I would have read it and known that I could stop reading it and not really miss much, I guess. So the thing with Gone Girl, right, is it's this it's a thriller. There's a guy who wakes up one morning, leaves his house the day of his anniversary, and then his wife disappears, and it looks like she's been kidnapped and murdered, but everything's really sketchy, and all the signs point to him doing it. He doesn't really know how that could be possible. And the first half of the book is pretty interesting. Like, you know, it's a well-written thriller on a basic sentence level and also on a tension level. Like, it really, you know, you get started reading it and you keep reading it. So that's a big compliment. And like I said, the sentences are not bad, you know? It's like you read it and you're not hung up on the quality of the sentence like you might be if you're reading a Dan Brown book or something.
It's pretty impressive, too. Like, the idea that you can write a book where what happens is this person's wife disappears.
Yeah.
And have it actually be gripping.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's not very original. Like, that's this is not, like, the first of its kind.
No.
And so if you can write it in a way that it's really gripping and keeps you wanting to know what's happening, like, that's good.
Exactly. I think the problem comes after the halfway point. You know, so the beginning of the story, you're getting two perspectives. It's first-person point of view, from two different people, the husband and the wife, Nick and Amy. Nick's is basically in present tense, like we're going through the action with him as the case sort of unwraps. And then Amy's chapters are background. They are journal entries starting from the beginning of their relationship and heading up towards the present. So at the halfway point, we've caught up on her journal to present. And Nick is, like, up Poopy Creek. And I'm not going to say that Amy's character was good. Both of these characters are pretty unlikable, even if they're supposed to be, like, you feel pretty sympathetic towards Amy. But, you know, she doesn't seem like the kind of person you'd necessarily hang out with. And then it does this weird 360 halfway through where it's
can't
just
be a 360.
Oh, sorry, 180.
There you
it
go.
Doesn't do a 360. I'm not a math expert. Yeah, it does this 180 where suddenly it's just a book about sociopaths, and when I think of a book about sociopaths, my first thought is always to American Psycho, right? Because, like, best book about sociopaths. And that book is horrifying and brilliant, and I don't recommend that you read it unless you really like literature. But that is, like, the point of reference that I have for talking about sociopaths. And also in TV, like Luther and things like that, the BBC kind of crime show, and Hannibal. So, you know, like, sociopaths are pretty popular in contemporary thriller settings. The thing I don't like is that Amy is a sociopath, which I don't care if the characters are likable as long as the story's compelling, but she seems like a stereotypical sociopathic woman that would exist in the mind of, like, why did I just space on it?
Tell me a clue.
People who hate women.
Oh, misogynists.
Misogynists, thank you. Misanthrope was the only word that was popping into my head.
I think the book sort of misanthropic.
Everyone
in the book is like villainous.
Right.
Well, actually, that's not true, but the main characters
not,
are.
Yeah, both the main characters are pretty unlikable, just in general. Like, they're a bad couple, and it's... They're bad. They're kind of bad for each other and also kind of bad people. The thing I don't like is that Amy ends up being this, like, weird misogynistic ideal of a bad woman. Like, she makes up, she, like, lies about being raped.
Well, and she repeatedly, like, injures herself and then blames it on men. And that's, like, her power thing.
Yeah.
She's like, I can do this. Everyone will believe me because I'm a woman.
Right.
Which is what misogynists are like, yeah, this is what the women do. Like, this is why they're in control of everything.
Mm-hmm. And in reality, that, like, never happens. And I know it's a book, it's a thriller, it exists, like, sort of outside of time, it's not representative. But I can't help but feel like there will be people who read this book and think, yeah, that just, like, oh, of course, that makes sense. A woman would do that. And you're just like, no, No, I don't know a single woman who would do that. Like, and I can handle a character being bad, but I just, something about her making up lies and then having it actually be made up. Like, she actually lied about these things that happened to her in order to frame people. And it's not that she's being perceived as a liar. She just, like, is. People think that she's innocent, and then, I don't know, it really pissed me off. And the end of the book, there's, like, no, I don't know. After the halfway point, it's compelling enough. I read the whole thing. I read it in, like, a day and a half. So it's not like I wasted a huge amount of time on it, but it left a sour taste in my mouth. And last night, I had to start reading another book immediately afterwards, because when you spend that much time on a book, especially concentrated time, it's like marathoning a TV show. It kind of gets stuck. It's like if you watch The Wire too many episodes in a row, you, like, start swearing a lot. And so I had to get, like, the taste and the sound of the book out of my head very quickly, which isn't what I, you know, at the end of the book, when I finished The Luminaries, the ending wasn't the best thing ever, but, you know, I didn't mind lingering with the story and the characters.
Yeah, I think with this book, like, the first half doesn't, because the way it's played off is, right, that Nick has this problem where people perceive him as a sociopath.
Right.
And then in the second half of their book, they're like, oh no, like, both Nick and Amy are just, like, evil.
I guess, not like
anyone who you know. And so the second half of the book is, like, American Psycho style.
Where you're
like, okay, now I'm spending a bunch of time with these really unpleasant, violent, like, unstable people.
Yeah. Although, and that's the thing, though. Like, I would be really interested to read a book that portrays a female sociopath in an interesting way, like American Psycho or Hannibal. I mean, that was an interesting thing about Luther. They were able to kind of to do that. I didn't watch the whole series, but, you know, they had a character like that, and she was pretty interesting and compelling. It kind of reminds me of A.M. Holmes's The End of Alice. There's the sort of female character in that who is, like, the object of the protagonist's relationship. Like, they write letters to each other. She's a very interesting and complicated and a manipulative woman, but it doesn't feel like she represents all women. She's just an individual. And I think that's where this book gets lost. It just, Amy is too flat to be an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think I'm just not big into thrillers. So part of it is taste, I guess. Like, I thought I would take a chance on it and read a fun book, but I just don't think I like books that a lot of people think are fun.
Yeah, it's like a thriller adventure, like a Clancy kind of thing.
Yeah. And, like,
I mean, it's different in many ways from Tom Clancy. It's not, like, about government stuff or law stuff.
But you know, like, you've got, it's the Dan Brown effect where, like, you read it so fast, you cannot put it down. Yeah, I did read The Da Vinci Code. Yes, I do have a master's degree in writing.
I didn't know you read The Da Vinci Code.
Hell yeah, I did.
How was it?
I was in high school. I liked it when I was in high school. That's before you're really critical of a writing style, you know? Like, you're reading things because they're fun. You're reading everything around you, you know, for better or worse. But I don't know. Crap going in, crap going out. I just don't want to read more books like this.
I think this was one of the things, I think yesterday when you were, like, two-thirds of the way through it or three-quarters of the way through it, you said something like, well, I guess I only like literary fiction.
Yeah.
Which it feels like, so if this hadn't had problems with if the female character had not been flat and also sort of a misogynist stereotype,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that you would have a different impression coming out of the book?
Yeah. I think that the actual crime that it revolves around is not as interesting as it might seem to be. Like, you know, someone staging their own murder to frame someone else is interesting, but I actually think it's less interesting when you have their point of view. I feel like if you just have the like, if we just had Nick's point of view, it would have been way more interesting. I don't think we needed to be inside Amy's head at all. Because then it's more like a, I mean, then it's more like Chandler or something, right? You have one point of view, so there's more mystery because you're not in everybody's head. And you're like, you don't know what's prompting people to do things, which is more like real life. And I, you know, multiple points of view can be super awesome. I'm certainly not opposed to it, but I think it was a mistake in this case. The book could have been a third as long and much more interesting.
Yeah, was there a quote towards the end where one of the characters says, "My life has started to feel like an epilogue," and you're like, "Yeah, that's because you're in an epilogue."
Oh yeah, you're probably reading.
I was just reading over your shoulder occasionally. I'm sure, yeah, yeah. I think Nick says it at one point.
Yeah, that sounds like.
And I was like, yeah, this does look like an epilogue. Like, the central mystery of the book has been resolved like 40 pages ago.
In fact, the central mystery of the book is resolved at the halfway point.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Interesting. Stop it there. Like, whoa, why did she do it? Crazy. No way. I don't know.
So I don't know. I feel like the fact that you would have had a different impression if it had been better done might mean that you don't actually not like thrillers / popular books.
Well, I mean, I like thrillers and popular books. I just think I prefer thrillers that are more literary. I think if Flynn made those changes to this book, it would push it more in a literary direction.
Oh, I see.
Than a pop fiction,
sure.
Straight up genre pop fiction direction. Because I certainly have... You know, The Luminaries was a big hit. I just started reading The Goldfinch, which won the Pulitzer this year. And, you know, I'm trying to get into some more contemporary, more popular lit, because I feel like in some ways I'm missing out on the cultural experience of enjoying something at the same time as everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, you know, I have high hopes for The Goldfinch, so... We'll see how that goes. But I don't recommend Gone Girl. I guess maybe don't see the movie either. I'm glad we didn't go see it. The movie's probably better than the book, frankly. But that would just be a guess because I haven't seen it.
They probably had to tighten it up.
Yeah. And maybe make it slightly less just like, I don't know. Maybe it's more like they're made for each other sooner on instead of it just being like, I don't know.
Oh, I love this. There's like an excerpt from another one of her books in the back. Yeah. It's my favorite.
Well, the thing I love too, I mean, like, you read the blurbs about her other books and they just sound like the same. Like you could use the same little like byline.
This family isn't nuclear. It's toxic. I think she uses the nuclear family joke a whole bunch of times in this book. She's like, oh, it's a nuclear family because it's explosive.
Yeah. Right, which is kind of funny. It's like, well, she obviously has themes that she writes about. But, I mean, and that's not to say that she is a bad writer, you know. I mean, her sentences are good. The story is compelling. I read the whole book, which is more than I can say for a lot of books. So,
true.
You know, good on her for that, but I just... I'm just not a fan thematically.
So should we talk about another one?
Yeah, how about you take us on an adventure through the lost world?
Oh, nice transition.
Thanks.
So we really like Jurassic Park, which is fine. I didn't see it when I was a kid. Like, I didn't see it when it came out.
I saw the first third of that movie a million times as a child, and I always flipped out when the T-Rex, like, I think there's a part where, like, the T-Rex kills a Triceratops or something. There's a storm.
I don't really remember.
That might not happen. That might be me conflating Jurassic Park with Fantasia. Both movies. I can't handle dinosaur violence. Freaked me out as a child.
That's fair.
So I didn't end up seeing it, my point is, until I was an adult all the way through, because I'd always leave the room.
So neither of us had ever seen Jurassic Park 2 or 3. I think Jurassic Park 2 is called The Lost World, Jurassic Park The Lost World, and I think Jurassic Park 3 is just called Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, I think so too.
Sort of like the alien Aliens, Alien 3 naming scheme. So, you know, Jurassic World is going to come out. So we were like, oh, we should watch Jurassic Park 2 and maybe also Jurassic Park 3. Yep. So we went and watched Jurassic Park 2. We watched half of it and we realized we had started it a little too late at night. The movie is very high tension. Much higher tension than Jurassic Park 1.
So high tension.
Like, the main... It also feels like the pacing is weird.
Yes.
There are these extended action set piece kind of sequences that are a lot longer than I'm used to in this type of movie. And it doesn't feel like it ultimately worked. Mm-hmm. Halfway through, Killian was really pretty confident that it wasn't a Steven Spielberg movie. Yeah. And I also thought it wasn't. And turns out it was, which was... really strange. He does a bunch of stuff. It's a lot more violent. Like, the violence in Jurassic Park is almost all off screen,
or like almost comic booky. Like the guy who gets eaten on the toilet, it's just kind of like,
yeah, he gets like chomped. Know, he's
and
dead.
It's like there might be some like blood splatter.
Or there's like you find someone's arm like lying around, and you're like, ah, an arm.
Yeah.
But Jurassic Park 2 is much more like, oh, here's a guy. He got torn in half by two T-Rexes.
We're watching him get torn in half.
Yeah.
And he's a good guy.
Yeah. It's like, and the bad guy deaths were even gorier. So it was surprising. Jeff Goldblum's in it. He is like the good part of the movie. And the writers gave him like some good lines, or he made up some good stuff. You can never really tell with Jeff Goldblum.
Also, sometimes he's just funny. And I don't think he's trying to be.
He's funny.
But
yeah.
That's, you know, his charm.
So he's pretty good.
Also, I enjoy his daughter, Kelly, although I wish they had given her a chance to be a hacker, like, in the first Jurassic Park movie. And then, also, there's a lady paleontologist, which it also has going for it. Those are the three.
And it has Vince Vaughn.
And Vince Vaughn is, like an eco-terrorist. But,
someone
like, a nice
who
eco-terrorist.
I couldn't tell. So the thing with the Vince Vaughn character is that you get the feeling that he's hiding something. Or, like, that he's not as he seems, but I think it might just be bad acting.
It's just because it's Vince Vaughn and he can't keep a straight face, like...
And also, he just looks like a bro.
Yeah.
And they try to cast him as this sort of, like, bleeding heart photographer slash nature lover. And I'm like, I'm not sure I'm really in this.
I mean, he seems nice in it, but he doesn't...
No, he seems nice. And I mean,
it's like
whatever. It's Jurassic Park 2. Yeah. Like, it was early in his career or whatever.
Yeah.
But so overall, I think we got to the end and we were like, well, we could have just watched Jurassic Park again.
Yeah.
That would have been significantly better.
Yep.
The
first half of the movie, we really weren't sure. We did.
Up until the part with the baby dino.
Yeah. It was pretty interesting.
And then after that, I felt like it just went downhill. It got kind of structureless. They were like, oh, the bad guys and the good guys, whatever.
Right. There were a lot of loose ends.
I'm not giving a very coherent explanation of this, but part of that's because I don't want to subject you to, like, me explaining the plot of Jurassic Park 2.
Yeah. Basically,
it's sort of plotless and silly and doesn't make sense.
It just doesn't feel like a Steven Spielberg movie. Like,
no,
there
really
are certain
doesn't.
Things that you know, I mean, maybe that's bad that when you go into a movie you're like, oh, this is, I can tell it's a Steven Spielberg movie because blah blah blah, but I find it comforting to go into a Steven Spielberg movie.
Well, it's
like,
a style. He's like the opposite of George R. R. Martin,
right? You're like, I'm gonna go into this and no dogs are gonna die and, you know, there will be some child endangerment but everyone's gonna be fine and there's gonna be some battle scenes and maybe one good guy's gonna die but it'll be like a really heroic death and, you know, blah blah blah. And some of those things were in there but they were just like gnarly and not nice, and the T-Rex eats a dog in San Diego and I was like, really?
Yeah, it was rude. But yeah, so you go in kind of feeling like you know the parameters of what you're going for.
Yeah.
You know, you're deciding whether to watch like Jurassic Park or like Alien.
It's like going in for Indiana Jones number 4. And you're like, I'm going to watch an Indiana Jones movie.
Rough.
And then you're like, God damn it.
Yeah. I don't think it's quite that bad.
I don't know. I think Indiana Jones 4 felt a little more like a Spielberg movie in some cases. And
I think
it was just a bad...
Yeah,
maybe. Bad for different reasons.
I think Jurassic Park, if like Jeff Goldblum had not been in it, would be like Indiana Jones. Because Indiana Jones was like, you went there and it just wasn't an Indiana Jones movie.
Right.
Like, there was a dude dressed like Indiana Jones in it, but it didn't work out.
With aliens.
Yeah. So I don't know. Jurassic Park 2, we weren't super impressed, and I think we probably should have just stopped halfway through it when we stopped kind of feeling it.
Although it did give me nightmares when we stopped halfway through it.
That's true. But that's because we stopped when two T-Rexes and... were like wrecking the place.
Yeah. Well, you know, dreams about T-Rexes are pretty scary. In some ways, I recommend it because it will, like, it makes you think intensely about life.
So you recommend dreaming about dinosaurs? Or you recommend Jurassic Park 2?
No. I recommend dreaming about T-Rexes.
Oh, okay.
Being near you because it's very intense. Experience and maybe makes you think about existential risk.
That's a weird dream.
And that brings us to the piece of media that we did not finish.
Is this like way more boring than our normal podcasts? I think talking about bad stuff is more boring than talking about good stuff.
Yeah, but the public deserves to know.
They deserve to know. So why did we want to watch Dracula?
Because we were like, I don't know. We were talking about how...
I don't remember what primed us to want to watch Dracula.
Said something about, like, what's the best version of Dracula? How come we haven't watched a Dracula movie?
Yeah. We went to try to find the best movie version of Dracula. And the one that I've consistently heard about and that we found on lists and that Killian had consistently heard about was Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992.
Yep.
Which is a Francis Ford Coppola movie starring Keanu Reeves. It's not really starring him.
And Gary Oldman. And Tom Waits.
And Tom Waits, yeah.
And Wesley from The Princess Bride.
Yep. And a few other people who...
Anthony Hopkins,
yeah. We turned off the really movie before he got there. So it started okay. So the choice here is to sort of like redefine the Dracula myth in much the way that Dracula 2014 or whatever that movie is called.
I don't know.
Where you talk about how Vlad the Impaler was like a great warrior, right. And then something went wrong. So in this case, it's like his wife died, and his wife. So all of the characters in the old Dracula, like there's a priest played by Anthony Hopkins who later plays Van Helsing, and Dracula's wife. Dracula's played by Gary Oldman, and Dracula's wife, who's named Elizabeth or something,
Elizabeth. And then
is it Elizabeth? But then the names don't match.
And then Mina, yeah.
Huh.
Weird. I mean, they don't. Yeah, I don't think they match. But
played by Winona Ryder, and then Wilhelmina is played.
Yeah.
That's her name, right?
Yeah.
Mina is played by Winona Ryder. Yeah. So there's this whole thing of like, Dracula comes back later, and it's sort of like reincarnated version of his wife.
Right. Basically, we're talking of the Mummy scenario.
I haven't seen that.
Okay, well, everyone it's else the will same know what thing, I'm right? About. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So there was the start of the movie, and actually a lot of the start was pretty cool. There's, like, scary Christian stuff, and, like, it explains the origin of Dracula in a way that's kind of fun.
There's, like, some funny, like, art school-esque special effects.
So it turns out, I was reading about it, all of the special effects are practical effects. Nothing was done with computers.
Interesting.
That's why it looks the way it does.
Right.
Is because all of it was like using puppets or like using screens that they projected things onto or like double exposures.
Yeah.
Because Francis Ford Coppola was like, oh, I'm going to do it this way.
Well, and it makes it feel kind of like
it's like a tribute to an old vampire movie.
Yeah, exactly. Which it does feel like sometimes. And the sets, I think, are pretty cool and the costumes are pretty cool. But the movie is a piece of poo-poo on a stick.
So what I want to see... I was reading about the making of the movie, and what I want to see is Francis Ford Coppola had an artist make, like, a full animated version of the movie. Like, an animated storyboard of the movie, sort of shot for shot. And then played that with, like, music from an old Beauty and the Beast silent movie or something. And then showed that to everyone who was making sets and costumes and everything.
Oh, that sounds neat. Yeah, that
like,
does
it would probably also only be, like... 45 minutes long,
right?
And it would be have sort of like the fun, quirky art charm of the movie without being so like I think we first felt like the movie went off the rails when Keanu Reeves didn't wreck things up too bad during the parts we were in. He's just like a terrible actor in this, whatever. fine. Like, what did you expect?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Dracula.
Yeah. And like, it's him with Gary Oldman.
Right. Right.
And Gary Oldman is pretty silly in this movie, but he's still a much better actor.
Yeah. Like, he does a fine job.
Yeah, I liked it, actually. I think his hair was terrible, but... But I think he did a good job.
Yeah.
But really, it's when you cut back to Mina and Lucy. Yeah. And, like, if I didn't already like those characters from reading the book, I think I would have just hated them. They seemed, like, totally brainless.
Well, also, Lucy comes out wearing a dress that's off the shoulders. And both of us were like, well, I guess this is a horror film where she's going to have sex and die. And she...
Yeah.
There's, like... some nasty sex in it, and you're like, okay, this is just like a weird sex punishment movie.
Yeah. I think part of it is that part of what I like about Dracula is that the book is super earnest in depicting, like, the heroes are portrayed as heroic because of their, like, strong moral virtue and character.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting as, like, an artifact of the time it was written. Like, you read it, and the virtues of heroes in this book are not like the virtues of heroes that we have now.
It's totally like a marker of its time.
And they're like, so I think it's super interesting. Whereas the movie is very clearly like you in the 90s looking back at Victorians and criticizing their views. So the problem is that this makes all the characters really unlikable because they all have like these super obvious flaws that are like, so apparent to everyone who's thinking about them now, like, oh, look, they're so repressed about sex, like, that's gonna come back to bite them.
Right.
Slash, we'll kill all the characters who have sex because we're still repressed. Like, I don't know what that's saying exactly.
Yeah.
But, so that went off the rails a bit because in the books, Lucy's not, like, super heroic, but she's fine. No. She's, like, a good friend.
Yeah.
And Mina is, like, supposed to be just, like, this titanic, like...
She's, like, totally capable.
Really awesome person.
Yeah, she's not, like, I wish I was popular like Lucy. And Lucy does have a bunch of, like, suitors, but she's not sleeping around with them and, like...
No,
giving them blowjays in the corner.
And, like, making knife puns about, like, how big it is.
Yeah, it's...
weird.
Oh, God. It's weird. I was just like, why are you doing this to her? Like, she's like, a pretty tragic character. You know?
Yeah, yeah. But so we ended up stopping before... So, we ended up stopping before the action really gets started because I didn't think that I would start liking the movie more once it started getting gory.
Yeah, we started... we assessed it, like, in the first 10 minutes and we were like, okay, we'll keep going. And then every, you know, 10 minutes or so we would reassess and we got about halfway through and we were like, this is not going any better than it was 20 minutes ago, so...
Yeah. Ultimately, it didn't seem worth it. It's very mysterious to me why there's not a good Dracula movie. That's just, like, a straightforward movie version of the book.
Yeah.
I will say I liked a lot of things about this movie. Like, especially the parts that took place in Dracula's castle.
Yeah.
I thought were really good.
Yeah, really interesting and, like...
crazy weird shadow stuff and light stuff and bugs and like that weird stuff, sexy stuff, although not all the sexy stuff was great.
No, it was weird, little
weird nipple stuff,
right? Nipple play.
All right, we're back.
Sorry about that.
Tis the season for Amazon deliveries
on Sunday.
Yeah, I bet they deliver more during this time of year.
I'm sure. I've never gotten a delivery on Sunday before.
That's interesting. But so anyway, there were a lot of things to like about the movie, but ultimately I think we thought that it would be sort of like Jurassic Park, where at the end we would just feel like we could have spent that time reading Dracula or like doing something better. So
it's kind of like Gone Girl, where there were elements that were good if you take them out of context and just were to look at one piece. There were things that were, like, impressive and good about it.
I think also that this didn't occur to me, but just now talking about it, it was also mostly a Coppola love letter to old Dracula movies, to, like, old vampire movies.
Yeah.
And that if you're, like, a movie buff, so it's sort of like Hugo or whatever, where if you're a movie buff and you think that the movies are, like, really super important, then maybe you watch this and you're like, oh, he's doing the shadow thing. It's like in Nosferatu, or, like, oh, he did this trick to make the actor stand straight up in his coffin, which is just like how Bela
Lugosi did it. Yeah.
Thanks for the catch. I don't know how I want to say like Luigi Osi. Bella Luigi.
Beautiful Luigi.
So like maybe if you're a film student and you watch this, then you're like, oh, look how he's doing this. It's so referential, but I don't care about that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to watch someone adapt the book Dracula to a movie that feels, when you're watching the movie, like when you're reading Dracula, except maybe less boring.
Sick burn. I think Dracula is awesome.
I challenge you to read it again.
I've read it twice. I'll read it again.
I cannot believe that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so boring.
No. I love Dracula.
Well, so those are the three things that we'd written down to talk about. Sorry if this was a boring one. I feel like it's less exciting to talk about things we didn't like.
Well, I don't know if that's the less exciting thing. It might be that both of us experienced most of them. You know, like, what we didn't like them, but also you and I both watched Dracula and both watched Jurassic Park at the same time. Oh, so we're not telling each other about them. So we don't have as much to, like, discuss, because both of us watched it and felt the same way about it at the same time.
Yeah. And there's also the fact that, like, with Gone Girl, it's a thriller, so we could discuss the plot, and that's what we did, but that's about the size of it.
Yeah. Let's just say some inflammatory things. Like, I think Gone Girl is a bunch of bull boo.
Yeah, and Keanu Reeves
boo. Boo. I'd like that boo.
Beep, boop.
Oh, yeah.
What? It's kind of weird. Next time we'll talk about our cats.
Yeah. They're always fun and interesting. And definitely not just us. Ever.
What?
Making a joke about how our cats are only interesting to us.
Oh. No, they're the most interesting baby cats in the whole world.
They're so perfect. One of them knows how to play fetch.
Our cats are smarter than usual cats.
Except when they're not. Anyways, thanks for joining us this week, guys. I don't think it was as boring as Daniel thinks it was.
We'll see.
I'll make it more interesting in editing. I'll add jaunty music.
That's a good idea. Austin Powers theme song.
Yeah. All right. Until next week, go listen to some good podcasts and read some good books.
Oh, we should talk about Serial.
Oh, snap!
Maybe later. After it ends. It's ending this week, right? Go listen to Serial, we're going to talk about it next week.
Yeah. Interesting Serial recap a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Is it in next week? I think we have 2 weeks left.
I think there's only one episode. We'll see.
We'll see.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Sound.